This Three Beards Media podcast may contain mature themes, and if you're not down with that, we got three words for you. Like the podcast. Nailed it!
Welcome, everybody, to our new episode of False Starts with Bill Blank and Chris Shipley, episode 8. Sorry that we're late on the live stream. Bill and I were talking about vacation, and then we got sidetracked by talking about the Spam Museum. Which I now have to hit. I have to go to the next time
I go. It's a real thing. It's there. I can't believe I've driven by it a million times, and I've never stopped. I've even done shows in Austin, Minnesota, where it is. There used to be a room there for a while, and I did that multiple times. Never once stopped at the Spam Museum. It's one of those weird things. I'll probably get into it with our guest, too, Jen. Like, that's one of the things about comedy and being on the road. Like, a lot of times, you're always like, I'll be back. I'll just do that thing next time.
And you right.
Never end up doing stuff about half the time.
Yeah, we were driving back from Louisiana, Mississippi. We stayed down there for a week, and we were going to stop in Memphis. I was telling you we were going to stay in Memphis, but I just didn't feel like we had a lot of time. And quick story, my wife, we were heading through Memphis, and we decided we were going to stop for lunch. But she wanted to stop in Tennessee, in Memphis, in Tennessee, so that we could at least say Tennessee counts on our, you know, list of states that we've at least been into. Mm-hmm. Little did we know that there was no place to actually get off to eat in that little strip that you hit Tennessee before you get to West Memphis, Arkansas. So it was probably like 7 minutes on the freeway. And then we got through and we were back in Arkansas and we were like, okay, well,
I guess we're eating in Arkansas.
So, but it gives us a reason to go back to Memphis. So when we got some more time.
This sounds like a Griswold story. It sounds like a story that you tell at Thanksgiving and people fall asleep in their mashed potatoes.
That's because my stories are not that great, Bill. That's why I bring on talented people like you and our guests. So with that, although I'm getting pretty good at the segues, I will let you introduce our guest for this evening.
Yes, our guest. I met this woman. It's at least 10 years ago. Okay. We were doing the Mall of America, Rick Bronson's Comedy House. We did a week together there, and we just kind of hit it off really well. We spent actually a lot of time together that week, just during the day and whatever else, and then obviously kept in touch over the years. Haven't gotten to this is actually the most I've seen your face outside of just Facebook pictures or whatever, but this is my friend Jen Cover, everybody. I'm excited to have you on. It's so fun to see you.
Well, thanks. I'm excited to be with you guys.
Yeah, and you're in Lake Charles right now, right?
I am in Lake Charles, Louisiana. I'm not trying to brag, that's just where the tour has me right now.
It's your home away from home.
It is. I lived here for many, many years. And the whole time I was driving through this afternoon, I was like, oh, thank God I don't live here anymore.
Is that where you grew up?
It is where I grew up, yes. Yeah. And
is it a conservative
my parents have
place?
Moved away now. So when I come here, I don't like stay with my parents. You know what I mean? I have a different place to go visit them. So now when I'm here, you really start to see the cracks.
Gotcha.
You're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, because when you're, it's all about your parents. When you're, you know, it's a home then. Right. Now that there's not a home to go to,
it's just another crappy little town in Louisiana. But God bless them. I love these people here, and they love me. And every time I do a show here, they sell it out. And so I have to keep coming back. God bless it.
Well, and, I mean, you're so ridiculous that you can go to a place like that because you go there multiple times a year.
Oh yeah, I come here about every 2 months.
Yeah, but yeah. you're so improvisational on stage that you can basically do a different show every time.
I do. I do a lot of new stuff here. It's a great place to work out new material because, you know, I live in Los Angeles now, and you can't go try new stuff out on stage there because somebody could be in the audience who could literally, you know, change your life. So you need to be doing really sharp, good stuff out there and saving your new stuff for when you're on the road when nobody will see you or do anything with you. At the Chuckle Hut in Iowa City, that's where you try new stuff out. So yeah,
that's the perfect name for anything in Iowa City.
Exactly.
That's the perfect name for anything in Iowa City.
I agree with you. But yeah, so that's what I've used it for, as like a nice little way to develop new material and to, to constantly keep things, you know, up and going. I just taped a special in April. And so I've retired all that material and just went on tour at the beginning of June. And now I have a full new hour. So it's been really nice.
So I was, it's so funny because, I mean, I was actually having, I remember when we worked together, I was having marriage problems at that time. And you were talking me through it. You were like my mama in the jail. Like we were in a.
Lesbians are so good at helping straight boys think. We think so similarly.
You guys are the only ones that understand women. That's why.
You know what? I say that in my act. I say, listen, boys, I'm on the inside trying to figure this out so I can come back and help you. But I'll be honest, it's got me real confused myself. It's not always an easier trick just because I am a girl. They're very enigmatic creatures. God bless them.
You've got and you have the best. The reason I brought that up was one of the things my ex-wife used to get pissed off at me about.
She's your ex-wife now. Good.
We're entering the therapy portion of the episode already.
She used to we'd be watching something on TV and all of a sudden one of my friends would pop up and I would be like, oh, that's so-and-so. And she would, what are you, you're such a name dropper, but it would be like an aside, I didn't expect her to give me credit.
It's like the dead guy on Law and Order.
Yeah.
You mean the third guy in the jury?
Exactly. You mean juror number six? That's who you're upset about?
I remember you popping up on Curb Your Enthusiasm one night. Yeah. And I'm like, oh my God, that's Jen. And she, name drop. Man. And I'm like, no, really? Like, we hung out daily.
I really know her.
So, yeah, we smoked so much weed together in that hotel.
Oh, my God, we sure did. We were so alone on that trip. Uh-huh. Because, it was winter. And yep. So it's cold AF. And then you had a car, I think, and
yeah,
I didn't.
I drove, yeah,
and so you were, driving us all around and we had nothing to do during the day and we just were hanging out and smoking weed because there was literally nothing else and walking the mall because there was nothing else to do.
That's how you realize how you realize the Mall of America is not that big of a deal. It's just regular.
Also, wasn't the hotel that they normally put us up in that's in the Mall of America was under construction.
So yeah, we were in the Thunderbird crappy, or something.
Yeah, we were staying at some wacko motel, America's best super motel, something for people who come on vacation at the Mall of America but can't really afford to be on vacation anywhere. So they go to this motel because it's
either
like
we can buy things at the mall or we can stay in a decent hotel.
Exactly, and they pick the mall.
Yeah.
So here we are, and we had to even drive into the shows. We didn't have really access to anything.
Yeah, because it's still far enough away. You can see the mall from where we're at.
But we couldn't
it's far enough away, you got to drive there. Yeah, it actually would have been quicker to walk there, probably.
Probably.
But there was no, clear path.
No, there was not. There was none.
Except for it's the Minneapolis winter, and you don't want any part of that.
Well, it was the Minneapolis winter, and like because the mall was under construction, people weren't necessarily frequenting the mall that much, right? Mm-hmm. They had figured out that it was kind of a cluster, and they were like, "Yeah, we're just gonna stay over here," you know. So our shows were also not terribly well attended. It was, ooh, that was a hard week.
And it was before they like lowered the ceiling. Remember that ceiling was so high.
Oh yeah.
So like laughter just like traveled straight up in the air, and you just,
it was like being in a cavern.
Yeah, you felt like you were eating a dick, even if you were doing well.
Like, no, no idea what that's like. One of the worst arguments I ever got into my wife was in the Mall of America because we got separated, and I said, I'm standing right in front of the Victoria's Secrets right here. And she's like, well, so am I. And I was like, no, you're not. And we argued for 15 minutes before it dawned on us there was two Victoria's Secrets in that fucking mall.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, why would you need two of these in one fucking mall? That's stupid.
Why would you need two of those in anything?
She was like, no, you're at Frederick's of Hollywood.
Oh, man.
So is that is Lake Charles a conservative place mostly?
It is. It is. This is.
So how do you have your little pocket of an audience Trump-y there?
You know what? The truth is that these people are Trump loving hicks, and I make fun of them and they take it.
Yeah.
They don't change their views, and neither do I, but we can meet in the middle. Like, they know that I'm going to be funny and that the things I say about them are not going to come from a place of thinking they are less than, right, or thinking they are stupid. You know, it's just like, y'all think this and I think this, and how funny is it that this happened, you know? So it really does work out. I'm not even sure how, but it always has. I never have, you know, not been out on stage here or changed anything I was going to say because I was here. You know, I figure out a way to say the things I want to say to the people that I'm in front of. So, you know, they always take it very well. God bless them.
You said that they definitely don't change their views, but do you think maybe by being open to your comedy and to who you are and you telling those stories on stage or whatever, that they may just sometimes
get it? Oh, absolutely. I think certainly their social views are open, even if their political views might, you know, swing Republican or such. You know, look, one day I want to make enough money to be a Republican. I do. I pray every night, dear Jesus, make me a Republican. I have so many bills. Please help me out here. But, you know, I just socially, I'm very, very progressive. And I think that, you know, probably fiscally, I'm a little more Republican. And I think that sadly, what has happened to the Republican Party is they've gotten overtaken by kind of right wing extremists and not really, they're now not really following, you know, the whole tenets of the Republican Party was originally that they wanted less government, less involvement. Mm-hmm. Right. In government and less involvement in our lives. And it seems like all of a sudden it's not about that anymore, right? Like, clearly they want more into my uterus, and they're very worried.
They want
about
their religion too.
I'm taking rules. Yeah, it's very religious and sort of puritanically based now, even more so than I think ever before. And that's not really fair to sort of the politics of what it was to be a Republican, right? Like, it was sort of a fiscal stance,
right?
And now it's really sort of become the morality police. And look, the far left is the same way. It's not like
that's what I was just getting ready to say. Yeah, like they've both been overtaken.
People the same way. They're just as fascist, trying to cancel things and change things and get everything to be so PC and blah blah blah. You know, the truth is that all politicians are gonna fuck us. You know, I just want to get fucked by the girls. So let's elect some women. So
I've said several times, being in the middle, you can't. Being in the middle of politics, and as far as more moderate or not so far left or not so far right, I usually know I hit a tweet pretty on point when both sides are pissed off.
Oh yeah,
that's when I know.
And I think just recently I have started to like listen to the other side. Like, I think for a very long time, for a lot of most, if not all, of the pandemic. I really couldn't listen to anyone on the other side. I just, I had to turn it off. And you know, I was very sort of intolerant of it. And I think just now and sort of coming out of it and being around people again and sort of realizing what it is to be social and to have views that might differ from somebody, but still wanting to know that person, you know, you come out of it and you start realizing, oh, I was sort of caught up in the moment of what it seemed like they wanted us to do, which was to be in such discord with each other that we were not watching them fuck us. We were too worried about bickering. You know what I mean? It's like when you argue with your little sister.
Well, just being on your high horse.
The fact that mom has stopped at the ice cream shop.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody, I don't know, we kind of celebrate the victim. Like, how fast or how old were you? How long did it take you to be out there in, like, in school?
I came out when I was 20 because I met somebody that I wanted to date, and it was a girl. And so I came home and just told my parents and such. But I knew probably a good 2 years before that. I mean, I think I would dare say I knew in like third grade when I was kissing my little friend on the playground. But I mean, like, you know,
that
like
could have been practice.
Yeah, right. Where I cognitively knew as an adult, I was probably 20 years old. And when I knew, the minute I knew, I told them, you know, at first I was like, I don't know what's going on.
So were they supportive right away?
My mom told me that I murdered the child that she raised. And that was pretty harsh. My dad was like, yeah, I know. He moved on with his life. You know, but my mom was a little broken up about it. She's fine now and got fine with it pretty quick. But I think, you know, just that, you know, and when I came out, it was, you know, 1993, 94. So, I mean, that wasn't something that everybody was talking about, you know, like it is now. It was not the subject of conversation. It certainly wasn't as accepted. It certainly wasn't as normalized as it is now.
It was like it was first starting then.
Yeah, I came out like when Ellen came out. Like, so it was kind of a
you guys did it together.
Yeah. And so you have to sort of be ready for, you know, what all that's going to entail for you in a small town. But I mean, everybody knew. I've had a crew cut for a long time. There's not
Did you and Ellen talk at the meeting then and decide to
come
out
at the
same time? Worldwide lesbian meeting.
That, you know, that's what's so funny is my mom, one of the first things she said to me when I did come out after we started talking again, she said, you know, Ellen is from New Orleans. I was like, okay. I mean, good for
She's
Ellen,
one of the good just, ones. She's one of the good ones. Not, are you more really like helping. Her or
it's those groomers on Bourbon Street is what it is. That's what the problem is.
What was the weirdest question that one of your parents asked you? Did your mom just ask you anything really bizarre? Like, kind of lesbian are you? Are there different kinds?
No, my mother and they've never really want details about it, but they are very interested in like who I'm dating. So I've always sort of been a serial monogamist. I have a girlfriend for a little while and then we break up or something happens. And then I just in a little bit find another girlfriend that I have for a while, you know? So this is the first time I've been single for any, you know, real long amount of time. I've been single for three or four years. And so, you know, every time my parents talk to me, they're like, are you seeing anyone? Are you, you know, what's going on? What's happening? Are you interested in someone? You know, and literally yesterday, my dad saw a picture of a girl on my phone and he was like, who's that? Like, I was like, you guys are thirsty for me to have a girlfriend. It's really, really weird.
I remember. Yeah. Jen is kind of a pimp. Jen does well with It goes well with the ladies.
I date out of my league. That is
yeah. I think comics can do that somehow, sometime. Like my
ladies
girlfriend
like
right now
funny,
is completely
ladies
out of
like
my
a funny
league.
Partner. They
yeah,
just do.
Totally.
Yeah.
They want to laugh. And,
but then they realize when they live with us, we're not funny most of the time.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And then it ruins everything.
You don't have a steady income and you don't have
It's not a fucking bouncy house. We're not like,
I just saw a meme and it said, "Are you okay?" And then the other person said, "No, but I'm funny." Like that's what it is. It's, you know, I did another show at House of Comedy with a kid. Oh, I'm not gonna remember his name, Chris something. But his joke was basically, you know, he was being snippy with somebody and the person said, "You know, what do you do?" And he said, "I'm a comedian." She goes, "Well, you don't seem very happy." He said, "Lady, you don't want a happy comedian." Yeah. Right? You don't want somebody up there who's happy. You're happy. You're not funny. I'm miserable and I'm fucking hilarious. You know, like that's what it is. Like the business of being funny is
pain
come from oftentimes just a lot of pain.
Yeah.
Pain so is funny. Is.
Well, exactly. I think what it comes from more than anything, it's our openness about it. Like,
oh yeah.
You know, we're open about the pain and we're descriptive of the pain and, you know,
and we've made the pain funny. We're saying, "Hey, haven't you had pain like this? Listen to how I dealt with it and how I, you know, made it funny."
So you didn't have like any problems in school or anything, or
Nope, I was a straight A student. I mean, I talked too much in class because I would finish my work so much sooner than everybody else that I would then just start distracting the other children. So the teacher was always like, "Sit down, shut up, sit down, shut up, sit right. down, shut up." You know? So I wasn't a great student that way. But, you know, I made very good grades. I was always really, you know, talkative in class. I participated. I helped other kids. You know, I was not a problem in school. That wasn't my damage.
But you didn't have any, because you weren't out in school, you didn't have anything in that regard, any issues?
Nope. Nobody in school, nobody. I had long hair and wore dresses.
Got you.
It was a Catholic school. We had on uniforms. Nobody thought
anything. Oh, uniforms. So yeah,
and I had
really
a, and I had a boyfriend all through high school and stuff. So really nobody thought anything in high school. It wasn't, that wasn't the problem. Like I said, I was raised by a narcissist, and that was my damage. So,
you mean the person that told you
could start talking about it?
The person that told you you murdered the child that they raised is a narcissist?
Oh yes.
Oh, I can't believe
Honey,
it.
Well, that's she is
like
my
she is like a female version of Trump. God bless her.
Have you had like a partner call you a narcissist?
I have before.
Because it kind of gets thrown around a lot now.
You know what it is? I think people don't know the difference between self-centered and narcissist. Yeah. Because I am very self-centered. I will gladly tell you that. I am the star of my movie, for sure. Mm-hmm. But I'm also very compassionate and very generous and very, you know, giving and loving and all of those things. So you can say I'm selfish or self-centered, but that's because I don't have kids. I don't have a wife. I don't, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like I live my life for me. I am living my best life. I don't have to worry about anybody else. And when I do, I will. But since I don't now, I'm gonna do me and you worry about you. So, you know.
Yeah. Cause we're an easy target for that label in relationships because we go on stage, you know?
And you know, oh, now are you going to go put this in your act? Are you going to go make this part of your act?
Oh,
live
God.
It right? And then they don't want, I don't want to be in your act. You know what? Bitch, you signed up for this.
Exactly.
Signed up for. And I don't know what else to tell you. It's not like I'm pointing to you while I'm saying it. I'm just saying the person I'm with. People are either going to know that's you or not. You got to calm it down. These are jokes. We all get it.
Yeah.
Calm down.
I remember my ex-wife got a breast reduction and I was talking about it on stage and she was pissed.
Oh my god, I she bet was she was hot.
Yeah, she got so mad Look, at me.
Ladies are not easy to please. It is one of the hardest things you ever try to keep a woman happy.
Well, I remember talking, I look back on it now and I get why it made her so mad, but it was obviously a joke because I adored my wife. But I was talking about the tube. They have the tubes that like fluid, drains out.
Yeah, the drain tubes. Oh, yeah, yeah. I know. Honey, I know my ex went through a breast. She had to have one of her implants popped while we were together. It ruptured. So we had to go through the whole surgery together. Yeah. And honey, she was never so nice to me as she was when I was taking care of her when she was surgeried up.
Oh, for sure.
I liked her on drugs. That was a really good
I just remember the two, because I go, this fluid drains out, and I don't know what it's called, but I just called it my love for her. Like slowly sticking out of her body.
That's hilarious.
I mean, come on, you had to know. I mean, I adored her. She knew I adored her. Like, come on. Like,
look.
It's just the way you got to know that's how my brain works.
Did she divorce you?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
She left me twice.
Jesus.
We got separated for a while and got back together. And then, again.
Yeah, that's just prolonging the inevitable.
Yeah, it ended up, looking back, it kind of ended up being that way. But
yeah, I did the same thing. I will give almost anyone another chance.
Yeah,
I really will. But ugh, it never works. It's never.
Oh, it's I was so
I remember why I liked this, and then after about 3 days, you're like, oh yeah, I remember why this was bullshit. Yeah,
I remember why I wanted out.
Yeah, I was just so
leaving. Fuck.
I became so codependent. It was weird because I was never like that.
Yeah.
And then I just became that way. And so you look back and you're like, I can't believe I let myself get reduced to this.
Yes.
I'm not that person.
Yeah.
It's funny you say that, Bill, because from the outside looking in, being somebody that's on stage with the, you know, being a comic and having that persona of having, you know, I don't know, self-confidence and things like that, it's strange to hear you describe yourself like that. Which goes to what we've talked about before in a lot of episodes about how outside perception isn't always necessarily the narrative that we see.
Oh, no, not even a little bit. I mean,
I think
that's one of the things people don't know about comedians is that it is a very lonely life.
Yes.
You think, you must love it. You're on the road and you're meeting people and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, kind of. But I'm also on the road, which makes me like cranky. Right. Mm-hmm. I've been up since 6 a.m. on a flight to even get here. I don't get to see the city because I'm in and out, you know, so quickly. I don't get to really enjoy myself while I'm there. I really just want to get to the hotel, take a nap and take a shower, get dressed for the show, do the show. And I pop right back up first thing in the morning to leave to go somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very lonely existence. I'm really only around people when I'm on stage.
Yep.
And you know, sometimes I talk to people after and I have hooked up with people after, but mostly it's like me with my hand in my pants, watching Law and Order, eating steak.
doesn't sound anything wrong with that.
I've told people that a lot. Like you spend the majority of your time alone in a hotel room.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you're a comic on the road, that is 80% of your time is spent just alone in a hotel room.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would have so many gadgets with me. Like, it's funny because, you know, I started comedy and I mean, you're not, I think you've been doing comedy obviously a handful of years longer than me, but we were kind of in that generation or whatever, where the technology moved really quickly. Like we started with an Atlas and then MapQuest
I had a big road Atlas, one of those.
Yeah.
McNally, and we would flip the page of the state we were in and try to figure out how to get where we were going. You know, we're on triple runs all up and down fucking Montana,
looking at road signs.
Terrible. Trying to get to the hotel so we can print out some MapQuest.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then you had the Atlas to back it up. And then the first versions of GPS came out. I remember getting one of those for Christmas.
Oh, yeah. TomTom. I had a TomTom.
Yeah.
Yep.
And those would fuck you all the time. Those weren't quite ready.
Yeah, if you didn't update by them those
all the time.
But it was a lot of great material, right? That bitch loved to put me on a bridge and be like, turn left.
Yeah,
turn
left.
Turn. I'm like, bitch, I'm on water. That's water. She don't care. She'll take you through somebody's backyard to get you there quicker. She don't give a shit.
Oh my God. How, and yeah, we used to spend so much time in that, at like that hotel lobby computer.
Yeah.
Which you don't ever you go to that
business
thing
center.
Anymore.
Wonderful.
Yeah, the,
great.
I mean, yes.
There's a printer.
Print out the directions for the next five trips we're going on.
100%.
They had one of those in the hotel I was in yesterday on Saturday. I was like, it's one lone computer now and a printer right next to it.
And nobody, I mean, like nobody uses it.
Nobody
anymore.
Used it. It just sits there. Yeah.
I mean, it used to be you'd be go down there and be pissed because somebody was sitting there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was like the old like phone booth.
Printing out their boarding pass.
Right.
Or
Checking their porn account in the middle of the business center.
And just all that stuff. All that stuff just kept changing and changing. And we just, I mean, we were going right along with it. And I mean, it obviously continues to do so. I'm not a TikTok guy or anything. I get shit for that all the time. But
you're missing I posted a couple of things on TikTok. And then somebody had to come back and tell me, like, oh, your thing blew up on TikTok. I was like, oh, shit, I should check that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't. Okay.
That's I mean, I'm terrible with Twitter. I sometimes say things on Twitter. Usually it's only during, like, football and basketball season, and I only bitch about refs on Twitter, and I don't use it really for anything else.
Yeah, and I got rid of it. Once it became kind of a free-for-all when Elon Musk took over, I was like, you know what? No one on here wants to hear from me. I'm just going to bow out gracefully and just go into the good night. And I just faded away from the Twitter. And my life has been just fine. There was a comedian who kept trying to goad me into, like, arguing with him. He would just say all these things. And I was like, you have 42 followers. Do you really think I'm going to take my 7,000 followers, engage you in a fucking argument, and let you get attention? Like, who are you? Are you stupid? Are you new? What's happening?
What was he trying to get you to argue
about? 42 followers. He kept just trying to goad me into an argument with him. And I was like, oh my God. He was saying all this really salacious shit. And I was like, I'm done. I don't give a fuck about this or this guy or this whole platform. Like, this is dumb.
Yeah.
42 followers and a blue check mark that he paid for.
Yeah, exactly. That he pays for.
Yeah.
Listen, it's all, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Bill. Finish your thought.
Well, it's all just kind of a cesspool in general. I mean, it's hard with social media to me. If I weren't a comic, I wouldn't have it. I wouldn't have it.
I agree. That's what I say to my mother all the time. I'm like, I wish I could fucking get rid of this so badly.
Yeah.
If I could just take it off my phone, take it out of my life, and just move on and just talk to the people I want to talk to, my life would be so much easier and so much simpler, and I'd be so much happier. I do not enjoy getting on there, but I do enjoy staying connected to people I haven't seen in forever.
Exactly. Yeah. So I was just going to say that. That's the good
thing. And it's just such an important marketing tool. I mean, I can't get people to these shows without using social media. And I hate that, but that's the way it is.
It's a necessary evil.
Yeah, it is. And I hate it. I really do. I would give anything if we could fix it, but sadly,
you can't filter it like that. It's just it's never going to exist that way.
No, I know.
Do you watch Black Mirror? Have you watched Black Mirror?
I have watched Black Mirror, but I have not seen the new Black Mirror.
I haven't the new one either.
I hear there's a new one that I need to see because it's very meta and very sort of about the social media. That's one of those shows that, like, I need a big pizza and a whole bunch of soda and a shit ton of weed. And then I'm just going to sit there and watch that.
All
like
of
that's
it.
My activity for like 3 days. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And see, here's my thing. Jen has one of the best, did you really just say that faces? She does. I'm telling you, like, on stage, I've seen it, in Hacks, when you were in the audience on Hacks, that you were making that face when she was trying to just gay everything up, and you just like, you got the best.
Yeah, it's not that what you talking about, Willis, kind of.
Yeah, it's not a resting bitch face. It's a. Did you really?
Right.
Like,
are you from this planet?
But there's anger there. There's some anger there. It's
absolutely.
I've seen. I'm pretty sure I saw it on Curb.
Yes.
Because that was. You got like. I remember that was, you had an argument with Larry David, right?
Yeah, I punched him out. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Okay. So walk us through shooting that, because Curb, well, is it just a point A to point B? Is it like,
yeah, in the audition, they said, you're a battered woman, but he says something very offensive to you. And in the audition, he says something really offensive to me about like being hit. And I just hit him. I just hit him in the audition, just punched him in the stomach.
Oh, really?
And that's how I got the part. Yeah, it's really a, here's what needs to happen, go. You know, like, say it however you want to say it. And I think what was so amazing about making that show was watching J.B. Smoove work, because that guy can improvise the most he just makes big choices and just follows them out. And just follow. I laughed more at that. He did a whole monologue that day about how women should have three titties, and because two is not enough, and one always gets jealous. And if there was a third one, then two of them could be together while you were just giving attention to one. It was so. I just remember laughing just so hard the whole time he was talking. So.
Yeah,
that was a great. It was a great show to work on, because you know it was, every take was different. And Larry really encouraged you to do that. So
to just play.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Have a good time. Make it funny every time. Make it different every time. He didn't care.
That's awesome. So how many takes would you normally?
Oh, I think we probably did three or four of each thing. You know, yeah. Because there wasn't a lot of needing to stop because somebody forgot their lines or anything, because you were just improvising.
Right.
So you could really get through a whole scene and kind of see where it takes you and just follow, you know, the line before and have it come out kind of three different ways. So it was fun.
Well, because they're doing.
You don't know what they're going to use.
Yeah. When they shoot, though, you know, they have the angles, right? So, you know, they have the shot, the over the shoulder shot. You know, from behind Larry, that's on you while you're talking.
Right.
And then, you know, that goes back and forth in editing, and like they're showing his face. And you guys, so if you do three or four takes, that's what amazes me about it. Like, if you do three or four takes and they're all different.
He's got coverage on all three people in the scene.
Mm, okay.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And if he needs to go in for a close up or get somebody else's reaction on something that got said that was great that he wants to use, he can say, hey, we're going to turn around and we're going to come in on your face. He's going to say his thing again, and we're just going to get your reaction. That way they're getting your reaction, but that guy, the other guy, can say whatever he wants to say again, and they could use that too because they'll get coverage on both of you.
Yeah, so they can just throw that in there.
It was just a different way to shoot, for sure.
Yeah. That's what I remember, that being, you know, amazing to me, how the first time I ever saw the way things shot and how it was never.
Oh yeah.
And it's not in order, or, you know, nope. it's mind boggling to me. And you see how talented like the editors are and the directors that have the vision of what the end product's supposed to look like.
Oh yeah.
Cause you have no idea.
The first time I started working on a set, I mean, like you were talking about hacks. When mm-hmm. we shot that scene, so they do all the coverage on me, right? On Gene Smart. So the first set of shots we're doing are, the cameras are all just pointed at her, just straight on at her. It's her doing her stand up. Then when they turn the cameras around on me to get the coverage of me heckling her, mm-hmm. usually what would happen in that instance is Gene Smart would step out because she's Gene Smart, and they would send in some stand in.
Who, so you have something to look at.
Right. So I would know where my eyes would go, but I would then do the scene with the stand-in. Mm-hmm. Except that Jean Smart is so fucking phenomenally amazing. She stayed there and did all the turnarounds with me.
Nice.
It was unbelievable. The only other actress that ever did that with me was Linda Cardellini on Dead to Me. Another amazing scene and an amazing actress. So it really was a testament to just what a leader she is on that set and how very professional she is and how she wants it to come out right. And the truth is that you're going to do a better performance with Jean Smart than you are with Jean Smart's stand-in. That's just absolutely the way
it goes. Sure. Yeah, and so you're going to, your energy that level is going to be better.
Yep.
Yeah.
And she knew that, and she wanted it to be right. And she, you know, rather than go sit in her trailer and have some 5-minute rest, you know, she was like, fuck that. I'm going to just do this scene and make sure the scene is good. And it was amazing to watch her work. Amazing.
Yeah, that show is really, really good. Like, it's a, have you watched Hacks, Chris?
I have not. I've also never seen an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Really?
And I'm a huge Seinfeld fan, so I'm not sure why I have not watched it.
It's so much better than Seinfeld.
First of all, I'm too cheap for I don't know what it was called.
HBO
now,
Max.
I'll give you my username and password right here and now.
Well, we had somebody on Three Beards Media named Mackenzie who had it, but then she changed her password or stopped paying for it, and then I got screwed on that deal. So supposedly my kid's supposed to get it. So at this point, I've got two things I got to watch.
My kid.
So hey, she's 24 years old. She makes a good living. She
can all right. Pay that's, for her own that's, fucking I was like, that's you're it. Not relying on a 12-year-old, are you? Okay, good.
No. I wish.
Yeah, it's child labor.
It's child labor. Right. We're in Iowa. I can put them to work now.
They're gonna change the law. They're gonna start letting 10-year-olds work at fast food joints because they can't get any help.
That's after the drag shows.
Yeah. First, there's the drag show. Drag queens reading to our kids. And now 10-year-olds are working at McDonald's. See how that happens?
That's right.
The demise of our family unit.
We are going
to be raising our family values because of these drag queens.
Let's take a break. Get a word from Revelton Distilling Company, which I finished their bottle of rye while I was in the pool. Got severely drunk and drunk dialed a bunch of friends. So. With that, I recommend definitely buying some Revelton whiskey.
Well, I wasn't one of them. That's bullshit.
I was three sheets to the wind, Bill.
I love you, man. I fucking love you. Can't wait for your podcast Monday, man.
That's what I said. I just didn't have the phone turned on. All right. Well, let's listen to this ad from Revelton, and we'll come back, and then we'll continue with Jen.
At Revelton Distilling Company, everyone has become a part of the Revelton family. From the tailors and their daughter who helped perfect their award-winning gins, to the team who installed Lucy, our 33-foot-tall custom-made still, right down to the local farms that provide our coveted corn, and even the cows on those farms who consume our mash byproduct. Want to see the farm-to-flask come to life? Now you can tour Lucy and find out where we take Iowa's harvest and transform it into our finest spirits. Choose between a 45-minute tour or find out even more by scheduling a VIP behind-the-scenes tour to get the taste of the full Revelton experience. You can visit them at 1400 West Clay Street in Osceola, Iowa, or find all of Revelton's award-winning spirits at any local grocery or spirits retailer.
All right, we're back. Thanks again to Rob and Christy at Revelton. Brown Dogs Farms is finished up with their sponsorship. They're going to move on to bigger and better things, so we want to thank them as well. So that's my ploy to say, if there's anybody out there that would like to sponsor False Starts, we do have an opening. With that, Jen,
I already got the sponsors dropping like flies.
No, I actually don't think it's you. Robin and Amanda are a small little company, and they're going to put their marketing dollars into some in-person events and things like that. So they actually were really happy with what we did. So
I'm just kidding, Chris.
Who would ever want to not be with you?
My self-esteem's not that low. That's what we were. That's actually what we were talking about like earlier, though, when we got into stand-up being like lonely, like people would be surprised. I think, a lot of comics kind of in our DNA, we kind of have an inherently low self-esteem. It's like, well, somehow
I think we certainly use comedy as a defense mechanism.
Yeah. Right? Like somehow stage, it goes away somehow.
Sure.
You're just bulletproof up there, but
yeah.
Kind of in general, like, you know, we're less likely, I mean, I guess not me necessarily, but like less likely to go hit on a beautiful girl, like a,
yeah, that's not me. I,
you know, if, right, if they saw us on stage, it's a lot easier to do that, but
for like, sure,
you're not just going to walk up to a girl at a bar.
You saw me on stage, I'm in, I am.
Yeah,
in,
exactly.
Yeah.
Cause that's when you get the basic bitch, you know, oh my God, he's so funny. Oh my God. You want a shot? Like those, you know, but yeah, I mean, I think we just kind of, I don't know if there's a, if that's part of the reason we even, that we get up there is kind of that.
Is
a little bit of a lower level of self-confidence than one would think.
Yeah, look, I think it's a way for us to feel normal.
Yeah.
You know, in a world where we don't feel very normal, in a situation where we, you know, that we wouldn't normally be comfortable in, but you give us that microphone and that's it. We're like,
because we're in charge. You know?
Yeah, it's about being in charge. Yeah. It's about, also, it's about like knowing that what you have to say is going to make them laugh, mm-hmm, right? Like not just thinking it, not just hoping it, like knowing it, like knowing that what you're saying is funny takes so much confidence, which is a different kind of confidence than you have to have with a girl, right? It's mm-hmm, just different. Yeah. And so when you get up there and do that and girls see you do that, that's what the panty dropper is because you seem like somebody who is so in control.
Self-confident
and so powerful and so on top of everything when nothing could be further from the truth.
Right. Which is why once they get to know you, they always leave.
Well, they do have a tendency to go. The girl that I like is a comedian, so that really worked out well for me.
Yeah, I mean that goes both ways. I mean I know I have a couple friends, like a couple married couple friends that are comics, and
yeah,
obviously that goes well, but kind of feels like you almost have to get married and like be on the road together.
Yeah. Well, I think that's one of the things though that's nice. Like what's so awful about being on the road is that you're away from your family.
Exactly. That's what I mean. That's yeah.
Whatever. Yeah. So it would be really nice if you could do that. The problem with it becomes, are you at the same level of being comedian? Right. Who's the opener? Who's the headline? You know, how does the power dynamic of that work?
Right.
And then also like, I thought it was going to be weird to date a comedian because I thought, oh, we're going to always feel like we have to be funny with each other, mm-hmm, right? Like we're going to always have to be on instead of getting to enjoy, you know, whatever. But it's the exact opposite. Everything I say or everything she said, like we're constantly like tagging things and making each other laugh about stuff. And oh my God, you have to say that on stage. That's so funny. You should do a bit about this, whatever. Like, I'm not trying to make everything into a bit for you, but this is so funny. You have to say it to people because that's what we do, you know?
Right.
So I love that part of it. And I love that I'm with someone who gets what I'm doing. I think regular mortal women do not understand comedy because it is such a weird beast. And if you can't understand that I'm going to be in a different town every night telling jokes to all kinds of people, and yes, there will be pretty girls there, but Noah will not be going home with them because I'm just going to want to go back to the hotel, eat a cheeseburger, and go to sleep, right? Mm-hmm. I need somebody who understands that it's not this party rock star life that regular girls make it out to be.
Right.
Like, she knows what it is to really be on the road. So she's not worried about me being on the road.
Mm-hmm. So well, there's, you know, there's been different times. It's not like we don't party ever on the road,
right? But you know,
the majority of the time you don't.
Yeah,
and it's not the most comfortable situation.
If I were in the kind of place that I wanted to party, I'd have brought her with me.
Yeah,
I'd have been
yeah,
like, babe, we're going, I'm doing a show in Vegas. You got to come. It's going to be so much fun. Hey, babe, I'm doing a show in, you know, Milan. Come with me. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a good big party. Fun times. You know, but I don't need to bring her to the Chuckle Hut in Iowa City because it's going to be of I'm going to be in fucking hell there. I don't even want you to have to deal with that. I am saving you by saying stay home.
Right.
Chris loves the Chuckle Hut.
It might be a new t-shirt. We just might the Chuckle Hut in Iowa City.
I'm going to punch you in the face if you make a t-shirt out of that.
Home of the Iowa Hawkeyes and Brian Ferentz's offense.
the LSU Tigers are in the College World Series. So I apologize.
Yeah, this is.
I wondered if that's what you were looking at over there.
I could see it in your glasses.
I only went to two schools. I went to two colleges, University of Florida and LSU, and they're playing each other.
That's
right
a rough.
Now.
That's a rough night tonight.
So I'm like,
Do you like one more than the other?
I mean, LSU is. Whooping their ass, and it's really nice to see.
That is nice because they were on the verge, right? They couldn't lose another game, right?
Last night,
Florida won game one.
Last night it was like 24-4. You know, so man. I think they figured it out and came back and made some adjustments. But and I'm not even a baseball fan. I'm one of those fans that waits until we're in the playoffs and then I'm a fan of the team. I'm that person, the one that real sports fans hate. That's me. That's the lesbian I am. I'm too busy building things and doing real work in the world as a short-haired woman to be concerned with the world. So I am a fair weather fan. I'm like, oh, they're in the playoffs. Yay. And I'll go buy a hat and a t-shirt and I'll act like I've been a fan forever. And then when another team that has better colors wins, I'll go.
Oh man, I just thought I just lost my train of thought. Did you football or what are you watching right now? Is there anything that you're streaming, anything that you're watching right now that
I can't believe I'm gonna tell you this. Ultimatum on it's a Netflix show. It's where couples give one of them in the couple says, you either marry me at the end of these 3 weeks or I'm leaving you. And in those three weeks, they have to date somebody else. It is the most trash, awful fucking show. And I cannot watch it enough. And they did a queer one with lesbians this season. So it is just like 8 to 12 episodes of lesbian drama. It is so good. It is so good.
I'm adding that to my queue
And I hate myself for liking it this much. I really do hate myself for being so into it, but I can't stop myself. I need to know. I keep skipping ahead and getting on the Google during the show to find out who's still together in real life and who is like.
It's why would you do that? Why would you ruin it?
Well, because stuff has happened in real life even since the episodes have aired.
You gotta know. Yeah.
So you wait till after the episode, like maybe.
So I wait till after
eliminated.
The episode, then I go look at the real life thing to see what really happened. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Listen, Jen, I'm with you. I'm a 52-year-old white man, and I have streamed every episode of Love is Blind on Netflix.
I love that show.
I watch it to the point where my 24-year-old daughter is the one that showed it to me. So I was texting her as I was watching season 4, and she's like, Dad, I'm at school teaching. I have not watched season 3 yet, and you're already on season 4. And I was like, I got nobody to talk to about this stuff.
You call me anytime, Chris. I will have a deep discussion with you about it. I watched the shit out of that show.
I got into Married at First Sight there for a while.
Oh, that's a good one too. Yeah. That's a good one too. I love those kind of shows where it's about like commitment and relationships and love, because it always goes wrong.
All within a couple days.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Right.
We're going to ruin your fucking life in 2 weeks. And
listen, that stuff, I would watch that over the Duggars any moment in my life.
Oh, I agree. I agree.
Dr. Pepper.
That
I also just got into that show, the one that all the people are watching, and I just, everybody watched it already. Breaking Bad.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Probably
you know, so I actually,
I kept trying to get into, I watched it like four times and I was like, I can't get into it. I can't follow it. I'm not interested, whatever. And finally, I just sat down and I got super stoned and I just watched it. And I just let it play the whole time. And I finally clicked into it. And I love it now. I love that every episode, I'm like, they are not going to be able to get out of this. And then by the end, I'm like, God damn, they got out of that. I cannot believe they got out of that. That is fucking, I really did think they were sunk this time. Wow.
That show.
That is the best series, like, finale I've ever seen. Like, yeah. It was the best just wrap, put a bow on it type. Yep. They usually jump the shark with stuff like that, and the last show is almost always a disappointment. And
yeah, like, but this one, I've heard this one is good all the way through, so I'm excited. Yeah.
Then you got to watch Better Call Saul after that.
So
exactly.
I was a big Breaking Bad fan. I've never watched Better Call Saul.
Bradley,
I was kind of just like Jen. Oh, I mean, I watched a couple episodes and was like, I can't get into this Better Call Saul. It's not Breaking Bad. Know, that's what I would kept saying to myself. It's not
supposed
Bad.
To be.
I'm aware.
You gotta watch a show called Claws. It's about a nail salon that is a front for a money laundering.
Oh yeah, you know what? I think is that
the guy who plays the brother-in-law on Breaking Bad, who's the cop.
Yes,
the brother-in-law cop.
Yes.
That guy is the bad guy in Claws. He's phenomenal.
I mean, he's a great
villain. He's so good. And that show has Niecy Nash.
I was just gonna say if that was Niecy Nash, but if it wasn't, I didn't want to.
It is such a great flipping show. So satisfying. So it's like, I love when it's like suspenseful like that, but also funny.
Yeah.
Like so much funny stuff. I mean, I thought there were even moments in Breaking Bad that were funny.
I thought Breaking Bad started out as a dark comedy. Like, that's what it was. And then it gets more dramatic.
Situations. But yeah. it was so good. It was so such a great show. Claws, I recommend.
Huh.
Do it.
Yeah. I've been watching Mr. Mercedes.
What's that?
Have you guys heard of that?
Uh-uh.
I guess it's a Stephen King, based on a Stephen King novel, I guess. But you know, it's just
that's
a
why
murder.
I haven't watched it.
It's a murder show, like the
murder.
The dude. It's really hard. I'm trying to explain. This guy's a crazy psychopath, and he gets like molested by his mom, and
fun.
He, you know, obviously puts on a great front, but then like it basically starts out. There's a Mercedes. There's a job fair. Like, people are in line for this job fair. Like, one of those deals where, like, people have camped out in line. So, it's, like, late at night or whatever. And they're all there in their sleeping bags or whatever. And this Mercedes just plows through all of them. And so, it basically starts off with them trying to find out who was driving that Mercedes.
Wow. Anyway, wow.
So, Mr. Mercedes.
So...
And it's really good. Like the first season, it's like everything's super, like, you don't want to say realistic, but realistic, you know, like believable. But then the second season, it starts getting kind of like almost supernatural.
It's like Lost. Kind of like, That's what Lost did. I was
Lost
like so
was an amazing show.
And
I
then once it got
show.
All cuckoo pants, I was like, wait a minute.
I tried
What's
to get
the fucking missed. What's happening?
I watched that entire show, and then years later, I met my wife and we got married. And I tried to get her to watch it, and we sat down and watched the very first episode. And when the smoke monster showed up at the end, I turned it off, and I was like, "Wasn't that awesome?" And she was like, "Nah, I don't get it."
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, I hate when you go back and watch stuff now because you're like, man, I loved that when it was on, and it just did not age well. It just
is
not appropriate. It is not
episode.
Or it's just tied to certain.
Yeah,
it's tied to certain memories or something.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, like, you go back, and it's just not that grand.
Or you go back and you watch it, and you're like, "Oh my god, I can see all of the stunt doubles. I
right.
can see
yes.
all of the robotic arms."
Holy shit, there's a boom mic terrible. Hanging there.
I think what bothers me is the ones that, like, seasons one and two are super good, and then something happens, and it takes a turn for an absolute dog shit. Under the Dome, who had the guy...
Under the Dome's great, yeah.
No, the third season is terrible. When the aliens are there and everything, it's so bad. It's so bad. And I was the same way with The Man in the High Castle.
Yeah, The Man in the High Castle got, like...
By third season, it just got weird. Yeah, so I will tell you, though, a great show, which might be right up your guys' alley. Have you seen Murderville on Netflix?
Oh, yeah, Murderville's fantastic.
Oh, I have not, but I should. Anything,
Jen, look, you should watch that.
Truth. I have to tell you this. I can't watch shows that are about fake murder. Whenever, like a horror movie or anything about somebody getting murdered, that's like a dramatization of it. I can't watch that. But if you put on Dateline, which is about real murder or Snapped or any of that kind of shit, I can watch the fuck out of that. Well, I love that. But I'll fall asleep to that. But Murderville. I can't watch like murder drama.
So this is actually, it's not a drama, it's comedy, and it's all improv. Like the guy,
this the one with Will Arnett?
Yes.
I saw it. It was super funny.
The Marshawn Lynch episode is absolutely the best episode out there.
Is it or did you say the Conan one?
No, the one with Marshawn Lynch. He's a football player, played for the Seahawks.
The one with Conan O'Brien made me laugh so hard.
I thought the Conan one was great. Did you see the Christmas special one with Jason Bateman and I can't remember who else. Jason Bateman and somebody else. Maya Rudolph, I think.
No, I've not seen that one.
That's so great. I did a show with Maya Rudolph and Will Arnett, a sitcom called Up All Night. And I played a woman who was pregnant and gave birth on a toilet because I didn't know I was pregnant.
Oh my God.
And it was so much fun. And Will Arnett was a delight. Such a nice guy. So great.
The one with Conan was the one with the magician, right?
Uh huh.
Yes. And Will Arnett's in the. Oh my God. Just losing his shit over the tricks.
It is so good.
I feel like we have almost talked zero about mental health tonight.
I think
maybe that's the lesson in mental health, is that sometimes you got to kind of go off track and just
be happy,
talk about happy things.
Jim won't let us get depressing.
That's right. I will ask you this though, since we are at the end of Pride Month, and we touched on it real briefly at the beginning when you were talking about when you were coming out and things like that, and how your dad was totally like, okay, you know, whatever. And it was just a different time. I think it's so important. That's why we need to push back when people talk about Pride Month and how it's being pushed in their face and things like that. And you can do what you want. But I think that's the point of having things like that, is so that more people are understanding of it and being open to listening to when it is time for somebody to tell us who they are.
I think that it feels like now there just are more gays and theys, right? Like, it seems like there's just a lot of gay people, a lot of non-binary people, a lot of trans people. And I think, man, when I was a kid, there weren't all these trans and non-binary. Were these people all just hiding and I didn't know? Was everyone in the closet? What the fuck was going on? Like, how did all these people now that are trans, how did that go down? You know, and there are certainly many aspects of all of the both the sexuality spectrum and the gender spectrum that even I do not understand or have any sort of connection to. But the truth is that I don't need to. It ain't for me, and that's fine. What I can do is shut the fuck up and leave people alone. I don't care what somebody else is doing, how they're living their life, as long as they're not hurting me or other people. Yay. I don't care which bathroom you use. I don't care what you want me to call you. I will call you what you want me to call you, and I don't care where you pee. I don't think anybody is peeing in front of anybody else, boy or girl. And Like, I just, it all seems very sort of contrived as a problem.
Right.
Yes.
So, yeah, I don't understand.
So I think that something like Pride Month has to happen because, and I think it's happening even louder and bigger now than it did before because people are saying this, like,
right,
sort of, you know, where, what when you, I wish we didn't have to have a pride. I mean, that what a lovely world it would be if I didn't need to worry about if I had the same rights as someone else because of the way I like to have sex or the way I like to love. Like, it's so stupid that that's what the case is, but it's true. There are literally things I can't do as a gay person in many places on the planet and even in this country. There are still places where I can't adopt children. There are still places where I can't be the person listed on my spouse's insurance, on their as the next of kin to be contacted by hospitals. I mean, there are still states that have loopholes and backflips you have to do through these laws to have access to your spouse in a medical emergency. I mean, it's really ridiculous. And I wish those things weren't there. And I wish we didn't have to have a month where we spoke about our visibility and if we're being represented and all of those things. We would love it if that didn't have to happen. But the truth is that it does have to happen. And it has to happen in a big way now because everybody's coming for trans people. And once you attack one, you're going to attack the others. We're not stupid. We've seen this happen. We've seen this happen a lot throughout history. And the question, you know, I think what was so funny to me about when Trump was in office was everybody was so quick to call him Hitler. And I don't think that that's even the question. The question is not, is he Hitler? The question is, are we those Germans?
Yeah.
Are we going to let somebody tell us what's right and what's wrong and what is appropriate and what isn't appropriate and who can be canceled and who can talk and, you know, all of that bullshit. And so I think we have to start taking things into our own hands. And that's one of the things that Pride is so empowering and so important at doing is letting gay people take back that power and feel like they are getting to say who they are, what they want, and sort of normalize the fact that we're gay. Now, the problem is that we've chose to normalize it by putting on rainbow tutus and pumping up and down the street, you know, to rave music while we're all on drugs. It's not the greatest show, but but I think that, you know, that the message is certainly, you know, one of love and positivity. And I think that that's, I hope that that's what people can take from it, is that nobody's trying to shove anything in your face. Nobody's trying to make you believe differently. If you have, you know, moral beliefs or religious beliefs for yourself, good for you. God bless you. I hope you live a wonderful, prosperous life, but don't come telling me what I can do.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, stop calling it a celebration then. If you don't want it to be all up in my face, quit celebrating. I wouldn't feel like you were shoving it down my throat if you were calling it a celebration.
Make it look like a goddamn party all the time.
I ain't out here celebrating your goddamn dirty queer whatever you got going on.
Exactly.
I wonder if people are my thing is, I just can't wrap my mind around how passionately people are against things like this whole gender argument. Like, people are like, men are men, women are women, and they're so passionate.
I think,
and it's like, why do you care that much?
I don't think a lot of people do care. I think the people that care are just loud.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Very small percentage of people, but those small percentage of people are very over. I mean, we're listening to a podcast on the way into town, and it was talking about how 60% of the complaints made about books when going to ban books. There's a process to that. So you have to call for the banning of a book, and there's paperwork, and you have to fill out what you don't like about the book. And books that have non-binary, gay, queer, trans characters in them are 7 times more likely to appear on the banned book list. And 60% of all the banned books have some queerness in the in them, and that's why they're on that list. And those books were reported by the same 6% of people. 6% of people are making 70% of the book fucking
right.
I mean, this is a little group that has nothing to do, and they've decided to make it their mission to keep information from. Let me tell you something. Every book I read as a child was a straight book. I never read a gay book. Nobody told me about being gay, and none of that knocked the taste of pussy out of my mouth. I'm just saying, it doesn't matter what a kid is going to be, who a kid is going to be. It's not about me reading a fucking book.
Right.
Oh yeah, I always said
gay in my life. In fact, everything I read told me that being gay was probably not a real good fucking idea.
Yeah.
It's what was going on. It's what was happening. It's who I was. It's part of who I was, at least. And so to now have, you know, to see that this small faction of people is really blowing it up and making it so hard for so many is what I think we have to start realizing. This is not everybody. It's like this Roe versus Wade. 87% of people believe in a woman's right to choose. 87. And now we've overturned a federal law that it's so ridiculous. And it's because a small faction of people got together and made a plan. That's what happened.
Right.
And they've had this plan in the works from the minute Roe v. Wade went into effect. They were going to turn this around, and they were in it for the long game, and they got their job done. And I think what they didn't count on is that so many people would be on the other side of it. And that, you know, now it's almost like a silly law to even go ahead, overturn your Roe v. Wade. I will drive to another state, you dumb fuck, and get a pill or get what I need done, because you've left it up to the states now, and the states aren't these puritanical little churches.
Yeah. We took it out. You know, we just took to the streets with coat hangers and said, fuck you guys.
Yeah. Well, look, let me tell you something. I have always believed that if men could get pregnant, not only would abortion be legal, it would be government funded.
Yeah.
Right.
It'd be free.
Yeah. I mean, if a man had to carry a baby, oh my God, we'd never talk about this again. Never once. You would have come up with a game based on kicking each other in the stomach once you were pregnant. Yeah. So that you get rid of it. You would have come up with a sport about it. Baby kicking. It would have been a whole fucking rugby thing. I'm telling you.
See how inventive you could get. Doorknob hitting.
Brass knuckles, whatever.
It looked like that scene in Airplane where they're all lined up.
An extra point.
Everybody's lined up to hit June Cleaver.
Exactly. It's a whole thing. But I think that those sort of laws and those sort of things, and I think this is completely related to mental health, because I think that until you can realize and feel validated and accepted and supported by people around you, your peers, until you can feel some sense of community, whatever community that is, whether it's just with the people that live around you or the people that are like you or the people in your same religion or the people at your workplace, whatever community you can find. If you can't find community, you can't find mental happiness. I don't see how you could possibly feel
totally stable
without some kind of support system.
Yeah,
and some totally sense agree. Of belonging and community. Yes. And that's what these pride celebrations are meant to do, to sort of cultivate that community and cultivate that togetherness and that we are more alike than we are different sort of feeling in people, so that we do, we are showing up more mentally stable in the workplace and for our families and in our communities and in these leadership positions that we all are taking on more of now that we've all come back together, you know? So I think it is all completely intertwined, because, you know, the mental health is what's always going to make things better. I mean,
well, what pride does is it helps with, you know, I guess in my opinion, it helps with people who don't have that support system at home as strongly, like, And then hopefully going forward, more and more kids, they'll come out and they will have that support system at home now because it's more normalized to where, like, I can tell you for a fact, I had a cousin, I have a cousin who committed suicide in the last year, who was gay, whose parents were complete, like, Trump people, like, listening to Alex Jones type people. And then I have my little sister, and my little sister grew up with a family who supported her from the jump. Like, she never, ever had even an inkling of being outcast from our family. She was the baby. I mean, she was the spoiled one. Everybody loved her the most, pretty much. In the house. So and so those two people, if you look, I mean, it looks very, one of them, and it's not to say that it's his parents' fault that he committed suicide. There's a number of things, but when you don't, even if your parents do, like, on the surface accept you, and then, but then they publicly support things that are directly against you.
Against you.
Like, it's exactly. You know, that's going to be hard to reconcile. That's going to fuck your brain up.
It does. And it is.
And so, but then you have, and you could see, like, it's very different. And that's why I'm very jealous of, like, the super religious people. Like, I've never been able to wrap my mind around religion, like, as a whole. But I know for a fact that the person who does believe that's super religious, them on their deathbed is a hell of a lot different than somebody that doesn't believe. Like, you know.
Yes, but I also
so think I'm jealous of it.
That belief in God isn't the only sort of faith and belief that you can have. You could certainly have a commitment and a faith, you know, in yourself or in a spirituality or in a, you know, some sort of higher power without having it need it to be religion. I think what you're talking about is being comforted in the fact that you would know something. You feel like
people
because they believe.
You know where you're going.
They know something. But the truth is.
Yeah. They don't. They don't.
They believe they what they've done is they've chosen to believe this fairy tale so that they don't have, because they want what you're talking about. They want that
peace of mind.
I went on a podcast with two guys who are comedians, and it was an atheist podcast. And I think I knew one of them was an atheist, and so I thought it was just gonna be kind of a discussion of religion or whatever. But I never really said to him what I was or what my beliefs were. And so as we start doing the podcast, it starts becoming apparent to them that I believe in some sort of higher power, God sort of creature. And they just started in on the, you know, like, what, why would you do that? Right?
Like you're just an idiot.
Like, what do you, why would you believe in God? And I was like, do you mean other than to comfort my fucking soul and not have a fear of dying alone? Like, what are you fucking talking about? Of course I have I get the sentiment. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
But also there is part of my brain that goes, those people are fools. They have a faith in something that isn't really a faith. It's just this blind sort of belief. And maybe they're not having these sorts of thoughts about it because they just blindly believe in, you know, Jesus is coming to get me. I'm just going to go to the pearly gates and that's fine. Yeah. And they sort of die with a smile on their face. But, you know, I also don't believe that happens. So is that, who's got the upper hand there?
I think you're spot on because Bill knows this. We've had conversations about this. I'm fairly, I am not religious. I'm fairly spiritual. Is the way I would put it. I go to mass every Sunday. I have a personal relationship that with God, but I also don't swallow hook, line, and sinker everything that the church and religion it tells me that I should. Frankly, because I don't believe God's a hypocrite. That's my, you know, that's the first thing. I've said for years, I don't believe that God's not going to let somebody go into heaven who, let's say, is a doctor and saves children and he's dedicated his whole life to working with the poor, but he just happens to like men, that he's not going to get into heaven. That doesn't seem like a big deal breaker to me. Yeah. So,
or Anne Frank, well, Anne Frank didn't go to heaven.
Right. Anne Frank didn't go to heaven. Right. You know,
they're just not taking into consideration what the Bible was you, God did not write the Bible. That's not a book by God. That is a book by men who claim to have had a relationship with a guy who said he was the son of God. Okay. Right. Like, this is a convoluted story at best. I mean, if you've seen the movie Religious, you know that this story was really stolen from Egyptians who have this exact same story of a virgin birth and a savior. I mean, it's the same story.
Yeah.
It's the same
story. It's an evolution of a fairy tale.
And the story is put into place to keep people in line. They didn't have laws. They didn't have jails. They didn't have a justice system, quote unquote. They had this book, right?
Right.
And I mean, even I have a friend who's converting to Orthodox Judaism, and she's going to keep kosher now. And I'm like, are you stupid? Like, I don't understand this. Do you understand that those laws about keeping kosher, the laws about not eating pig and not eating meat with cheese, were put into that book because there was no refrigeration at the time? If you ate the pig, you died. They were like, oh my God, Isaac ate one of those pigs and he died. Put it in the book. Don't eat the pigs. Put that in the book. It killed Isaac. Put it in the book.
They're bottom feeders.
You couldn't eat meat with cheese. You would die. Shrimp. You couldn't eat shrimp. You would fucking die. There was no refrigeration. That's what those laws were for. They were not anything religious based. The reason they said men should not lie with men as they do with women is because they were all a bunch of fucking homos. And if they kept fucking each other, they were never going to propagate the species. Yeah,
they were like, that's true.
People,
we got procreation was the big God part.
Says,
yeah.
God says, stop fucking the boys and start fucking the ladies so that we can get more people. That's why it's in the book. It doesn't have shit to do. God did not say that. God does not give a fuck what you are. Clearly, He made you way you are.
That's what I've said 100 times, and I've had conversations with. I've had conversations with my oldest, who is transgender. And said 1,000 times, God made you who you are.
Yep.
He didn't make a mistake. So you can have a relationship with God any way you want. Don't go based off of what somebody else tells you what that version is or what book that somebody said they read or anything else. You stick to the fact that Jesus preached that he loved everybody and that he didn't make a mistake. And at that point, you'll be fine. And kind of, you know, kind of what Denny said. I'd rather go through life where I believe in a higher power and find out there's not one later than the other way around. 100%. 100%. All right, we got to wrap up.
No way. Here. I'd rather go through life not believing it and doing whatever I want. And then at the end, finding out that there is one. Like, holy shit, I'm still going to heaven.
Or as we like to call that, Brian Ferentz's offense.
It's like, what? What a great surprise. And here I thought a revelation was a bad book.
You're having your revelation here at the end. See?
Yeah,
there you go.
Like we've come back to the beginning.
Jen, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you, if you're going to be around in the Midwest at all, if anybody can find you up there, and where they can find you.
I am going to be all over the everywhere. I literally have tour dates that span into 2025. You can see them all as they come up. I try to get them listed very quickly. My website is jencober.com. Jen, short for Jennifer, J-E-N. My last name is Kober. It's like sober, but with a K.
I feel like you've rehearsed that before.
I have. I say a lot. Because everyone calls me Jen Colbert. I don't know why they think I'm French. But it's very fancy. So jencober.com will have all the information. You can find me on Instagram and Facebook. I'm not on Snapchat because I don't give a shit what you look like as a deer. But it's a good time. It's a good time to find me on the social medias and such. I am also on the new season of The Mandalorian. So if you are
Star Wars nerd, check that out. What episodes are you in?
I'm in third season. I'm in the episode with Lizzo and Jack Black.
Oh, well, now I got to go back
and
rewatch
it. It's being touted as the fat episode apparently there are no fat people on Star Wars, except they put all of us in this one episode.
In one episode.
I'm going back to watch that episode.
I actually saw Tenacious D last fall. It was amazing.
Oh, yeah?
It was so fun.
I love those guys.
Oh, my God. It was so fun. I had so much fun.
I love them.
Yep. All right, Jen. Thank you so much for coming on. I love you. It was great to see you.
Of course, I love you.
Yes, ma'am. Mwah, mwah, mwah.
She just partially likes me. So
you're new.
I know I'm new.
I like your beard. You have a better beard.
I do.
You have the beard that I want, but mine won't come in all the way. I just got a few bristles here on the bottom, just pig bristles.
Come on, come on.
That's Jen Cova, the bearded lady.
The bearded lady.
$10. Walk around back.
All right, we got a busy week around here at Three Beards Media. We've got another episode of Hot Mess Happy Hour coming up in the middle of the week, Old Man Strength. And then we just released Like Father, Like Daughter on Sunday. So with that, check us all out, www.threebeardsmedia.com. Bill, thank you very much. Yes. Jen, it was a pleasure meeting you. I can't wait to follow your career. And when you come
when you come
to the Midwest, I will definitely come and see you. So
thank you so much. I'd love to have you.
All right. And with that, we are out of here.
See you.